Welcome, everyone. This is Melinda Zarate with Emboldened Heart. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today. We have a really interesting segment, and the topic is fascinating. I'd like to take just a moment for those of you who are new listeners to just share a little bit of information about the whole purpose for Emboldened Heart. Emboldened Heart was actually created for the purpose of educating, sharing information about life-changing energy, tips, tools, techniques, concepts, processes, and new thought, all of the above. And what I really have as my heart's desire is the desire to encourage all of you to use energy and to use your own goodness, your own blessings, and your own awareness to create a happy, healthy, peaceful, and vibrant life for yourself. And so all of these tools, all of the speakers that I bring onto this program, all of the information that's shared is for that very purpose. So, again, thank you for joining me. Today, I have a guest speaker that I am really excited about. I was actually introduced to his work through another friend and colleague, Rudy Hunter, who has been on my events a couple of times. Today, we have with us Edward Franco. He is a therapist who specializes in treating older adults. He holds a master's degree in counseling psychology and a postgraduate certification in gerontology from the Brookdale Center on Aging. Ed is a student of A Course in Miracles and a lecturer and group facilitator. He's also a strong believer in the healing power of humor. As the creator of Regent Hospital's Humor and Healing Workshop, he was featured in the New Yorker magazine's Talk of the Town column. Ed has been passionate about aging and the rights of elders all of his adult life. He believes that life gets richer and fuller with time, and that the 19-year-old and the 90-year-old are entitled to the same level of happiness and fulfillment. Ed is the author of a book entitled Life Unlimited, A Timeless Approach to Aging and Longevity. In its unflinching look at the cultural constructs surrounding aging, death, and immortality, his book provides a unique perspective on the subject. It's not the author's contention that death is not inevitable and that this world will be transformed into paradise when unconditional kindness is extended between and among all people. Ed, welcome.
Melinda, thank you. Thank you so much for that. I want to start, you know, just by, you know, sharing, I guess, with your listeners what I shared initially with you privately is that I'm very comfortable from the podium giving lectures on around aging and longevity, but I'm very new to this world of interviews, and I feel so blessed and honored that it's you. And I want to give a quick shout out also to Rudy, because Rudy Hunter was, as you mentioned, the catalyst for our mm-hmm. meeting each other. And
right.
I listened to you almost religiously. I listen to your Friday call.
Thank you.
As you know, I do a nursing home visits on Fridays, and I have half my lunch listening to you live, and then I come home afterwards and I listen to the recording. Your energy of calls really infuse me with a positive energy that I take into. And when you go to a nursing home, you never know what you're going to find, and I always carry your energy with me. It strengthens me in that sense. And also, I want to say that and since it's a webinar, only you'll know if you're blushing, and I'm sorry if you are, but your authenticity and your integrity are really palpable and really very meaningful to me. And the last thing I want to say before I give it over back to you is that Well, two quick things, actually. One, I noticed when you were saying in the introduction that it's not my contention that death is not inevitable, I just want to say, actually, it is my contention that death is not inevitable. I just want to just rephrase that a little bit. That's the whole premise of the book, that death is not inevitable. And I just went blank on the other thing. So if it comes back to me, I'll come back.
Okay.
To that.
Well, thank you so much for your kind comments. It really means a lot to me. This is a labor of love. It really is for me. And so when it resonates with listeners and with guest speakers, it's so important. And it's just, it is the sign that I need to hear and to just kind of reinfuse me with my enthusiasm and my devotion to what I'm doing with Emboldened Heart. And thank you for clearing that up. I may have just misread, but I totally do concur that after reading your book and after speaking with you a number of times, that you definitely do not believe that death is inevitable and that there are possibilities beyond what many of us, in fact, most of us, may have considered. So that is the reason I became so excited about the possibility of having you on the program. I think we're going through so many changes, and your book is so timely. It's so perfect right now for what people are feeling and sensing and thinking and experiencing. And I really, when I read the book, I have to say my mind was kind of blown, really, in some ways, because it was just like, oh my gosh, I just felt like the windows and doors were being flung wide open in my thought processes about all of this. And that was exciting. And so again, I'd like to tell everyone the name of the book is Life Unlimited. And it's a timeless approach to aging and longevity. And there is a wonderful quote on the cover of your book by Sandra Ray, who is a best-selling author and has written many books on kind of rebirthing, the birth process, very powerful books, and she's written many. But Sandra Ray, In reviewing and reading Ed's book, her quote and comment was, "Ed tells us how to go beyond our own beliefs about ourselves, beyond our history, and beyond our wildest imagination. He shares how to live the unprecedented life, and on up to the greatest expression of life, becoming an immortal. Are you ready? You can start here." I love that. I just thought it was great.
Thanks.
And I thought it was also just a wonderful way for us to start this discussion because, wow, does that open up the possibilities?
Yeah, and in fact, I remembered the thing that I couldn't think of earlier was that the other thing that I was so drawn to about you, Melinda, and resonates so strongly with is that you make it your policy to anyone who comes on your show, you have to believe in what they're doing. And
yes.
That just means so much to me that's who you are. So, okay, so having said all of that, and again, I'm new to this world, so I want to make a joke and say, please be kind.
Well, I think you're doing just fine. And I'm relatively new to this world, too. And I think we can just agree that this whole teleseminar way of communicating is relatively new. So, you know, we're all kind of in the same club here, and the whole reason we're all here together is for the purpose of sharing information, learning, and expanding our lives in every way possible.
Mm-hmm.
So there are just a couple of paragraphs about the book that I would like to just share to, again, give people something to chew on before we really dig in.
Okay, sure.
With Ed's book, one of the key questions is is it possible that the death of our physical bodies was never part of a divine plan? That's a good question, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And then is it possible that the key to unlocking our immortality lies not so much in the realm of science as it does in our own hearts and minds? I love those two questions. Those questions just really open the door to a fantastic discussion. And I think when we were first talking about the book, there's so much in it. It's so full and so rich, and it covers so much ground. It's wonderful. It's not, and when I say that, this is not a 500-page treatise.
It's not
like that. But it is just rich with information, concepts, ideas, and possibilities. That's what I loved about it. As I was reading it, Ed, it was just kind of, just from right out of the gate from chapter one, it was just kind of, wow, this is so fascinating. You know, it just gave me a lot to think about. And the first and foremost, just the idea that immortality is indeed available to us. That's awesome.
Along those lines, Melinda, I know that you usually, your opening question is often, see, I did my homework, tell us your story, right?
Uh-huh.
And along those lines, if I may I just share a little bit of that in terms of...
Oh, please, yes. That would be great. Everyone always enjoys hearing how you kind of, how you ended up sort of getting to a place where this became so important for you. So, yes, please.
Yeah, and in fact, when we talked, prior, we had several phone calls prior to the interview, and I said, well, my story is really three stories that I'd like to tell, and I'm going to try to get them in the amount of time generally allotted, and I think I can do that.
I'm sure you can.
The first story is my mother's retirement. And I guess what I'm sharing here is what it is that brought me to a place where I became so fiercely passionate about age and aging in our culture. I mean, particularly in our American culture, United States, because that's where I live. I understand. I gave a lecture yesterday and at an assisted living facility, and I know that in other cultures, older adults are sometimes more commonly revered than here. But actually, for the purpose, I'm getting off topic. Let me stay with these three brief stories for the moment. My mother was a special education teacher. She was a PhD. She loved teaching. She taught children with learning disabilities, and she was so good at it and passionate about it. In fact, I've often said about her relationship to her work, it was her passion and her life.
How wonderful.
And I'm always a little envious of that. And by the way, in the book, I talk about how, we can find, well, there's so much I want to, let's see what we get to later about how we find our
okay.
gifts. Some of us find our gifts much later in life. You know, but she was one
right.
of those people who always knew that, and I've always been a little envious of those people. They know what they want to do from a very young adult, and it's great. Anyway, the latter half of her professional life, she was working for the New York City Board of Education, and they had a policy in place at that time that you had to retire in the year of your 70th birthday. And so the year of her 70th birthday came, and she retired. And, I was – one of the things I think that made me interested in age from a very young age myself was because I was what was then called a change of life baby. She had me in her early 40s. Now, today, we know that that's common, that's young, right? Today you freeze your eggs and have the kid at 60. But
right.
I mean, then, it was a pretty big deal. And so I was aware of how it played out in her life when I was growing up. But then especially when she retired, and I said to her, Mom, what are you going to do? And I said, do you want to do substitute teaching? She said, no, I really need to be in control of the classroom. I said, well, what about tutoring? She said, no, I don't really enjoy the one-on-one so much. And so I figured she would figure it out. And long story short, for the sake of what I'm sharing here, she was a devout Roman Catholic. And how she wound up spending her time after retiring, basically she attended a daily mass, which she enjoyed doing. She had one or two retired friends in the neighborhood, retired teachers that she visited. She enjoyed knitting, so she knitted a lot. And she watched television. So that was basically her life. And it was 3 short years after she retired that she was first diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease.
Now, any of your listeners
who are listening ever had a loved one with this disease, they know the horror that it is. And I also want to be very clear about something. When I say this, there's no clinical evidence linking retirement to Alzheimer's disease. However, and depending on, there's a concept that's related that I don't want to get for the purpose of this, what I'm sharing now. I don't want to get into that in great detail at the moment. But I do believe that what happened was, the concept is called psychological mortality, and it's basically a clinical way of saying death of the spirit. And I believe that that's what happened to her, because here it was, I mean, think she was what in those days would have been called a young 70. Today we know 70 is young, but, you know, she was vibrant, energetic, enthusiastic, sharp. The kids loved her. She loved the kids. But there was the message from the school board saying, you're 70, go home.
Mm-hmm.
And she's thinking, well, wait a minute, but I'm great at what I do. I love the kid. No, there's the message, very clear. You're 70, go home. So that was one of 3 things that really impacted my life, because I had a gerontology professor that said, you know, no one that gets passionate about older adults comes to it accidentally. Reflect on what brought you here. So that was one thing. Here's story number two. Story number two is Sandra Ray, who you mentioned, and I mean, I can't tell you the thrill when she wrote that cover quote for me, but let me just give you a micro encapsulized version of how she impacted my life. So at a certain point, sometime in the 90s, I discovered rebirthing. And for those of your listeners who, you know, some of them I'm sure are going to be familiar with modality, everyone sort of describes it differently. I usually describe it as a psycho-spiritual approach to mind-body purification. And it uses three essential tools. It uses client-centered dialogue. It uses customized affirmations, and it uses a gentle breathing process. So I had started going to a rebirther, and I was having great results. This was an older gentleman, very wise, and I was loving the results I was getting. And so I figured I wanted to learn more about the modality. And Sandra Ray is the mother of the movement. So I went to a bookstore, and I picked up Celebration of Breath. She's to date written something like 20 books. That was at that time maybe number 3 or 4 or something like that. And I get to the part of the book on physical immortality, and I said to myself, I basically freaked, and I said, oh wow. I said, so basically this woman's a nut. I said, you know, I said, well, there goes liking this modality. Anyone who, you know, has, the way I said it, I said, she must have an ego the size of Cleveland. She believes she can defeat death. So that, you know, but here's what was really, again, I'm trying to encapsulate the essence of it. What ultimately I came to see that as, it was pushing my buttons. My ego was warring. My ego was warring with the fact that I couldn't expand my consciousness so broad to allow for a God that was so universal, so kind, and so loving, that didn't want to kill us, but wanted us just to have more and more life. Okay, and I'm saying God, call it whatever you want, universe, spirit, etc.
Sure.
So ultimately, when I integrated that, you know, it was really an amazing example for me of how something, you know, sometimes it's so meant to be one's message was really something I found it so disdainful, and so, you know, I had to push it away. I said, because this is lunacy. I said, this makes, you know, zero sense. So that's story number two. How am I doing? Okay?
You're good. This is great. Keep going, please.
and here's story number three. By this time, I was working with older adults. and I'm at an assisted living residential facility. I'm leading non-clinical groups. They were storytelling, reading and storytelling groups. And as you know, you may know, those facilities are typically, the population is like 85-90% female, because women outlive men.
Yes.
So it was always sort of a big event when a man would come to the group. And one day, a male resident came to the group, a man named Bill, and I asked him to introduce himself to the group by way of, you know, telling his story or whatever he wanted to share with us. And he said, he told his story. He was 92 years old. He had been married for 65 years. His wife had died a year before. He came to live at this facility 6 months ago. And then he said, we weren't blessed with children, was his words. He said, my life was devoted to my wife and my business. He said, but they're both gone now. He said, I don't know what the future holds, but I know I need to get on with my life. Now, when he said those words, Melinda, I mean, I had my facilitator's hat on, and I was, you know, it was a very powerful moment for me. I didn't exactly fully understand. It took me a while to integrate it. But here's how, you know, I can summarize what that moment was for me years later. If you went out on the street, any city in America, and you stop someone on the street, the average person on the street, and you say, excuse me, I know this 92-year-old man who says he needs to get on with his life. What do you think about that? And they'll say, "But excuse me, what?" And you say, I know this 92-year-old man who says he needs to get on with his life. What do you think about that? They're going to say, oh, no, he doesn't. Well, get on with his life. No, he just needs to get comfortable, because very soon, depending on his faith orientation, he's going to meet Jesus or Moses or Buddha or Lord Krishna, or if he's an atheist, he'll be dust. Mm-hmm. But here was a man who was the living embodiment of this idea of what I sometimes call dramatic longevity. It's typically called in the movement physical immortality, and that's sometimes a lot for people to wrap their minds around. But here was a man who was so living in the now. He wanted, you know, he just wanted the experience of community. You know, he wanted to attend Friday night religious services. He wanted to do it with someone. You know, it was the way a friend of mine puts it, he wanted to be among the world of the living. And I just thought it was such a powerful a moment for me, because I thought, wow,
yes.
You know, a 92-year-old saying, I need to get on with my life. And so those are my brief stories in terms of what sparked my passion for this field.
I think that was really important for you to share, Ed, because all of us can identify with certainly at least one, and in many cases all three of them. You know, as we are getting older ourselves, we're experiencing issues with our own parents, or we're really just trying to kind of wrap our minds around everything that's going on, you know, and all of the changes in our person, our physical being, as well as our emotional and mental being. We're trying to understand the changes that are going on around us energetically and on our planet, within our institutions and our communities. There's a lot going on. And I think the third, you know, I love it that you kind of built up to this third story with this obviously fine gentleman who had a wonderful outlook on his life and life in general. You know, to be in your 90s and say, I need to get on with my life, you know, that is just jubilant, in my opinion. It's wonderful. So I think everybody can really appreciate, I know my listeners can really appreciate that. It's like, yes, that's what we all want to do at whatever point we are in our life. We want to continue living. We want to get on with our life. We want to enjoy our life. So your book and your approach, and I know this book is just a true labor of love in communicating all of what has been going on for you and your ideas, your thoughts, and a beautiful incorporation of many other people's thoughts and ideas into this book that really lays out a lot of interesting ideas. And the first chapter, I loved it. Chapter one is entitled New Game, New Rules, which is, I think it's awesome. And as you stated, we do live in a time that's far more exciting than any other in history in terms of possibilities. What's fact today was not even in the realm of science fiction 100 years ago. And what seems to be possible energetically is moving science forward, light speed really, at this point in time. These new quantum theories and this energetic understanding that's occurring, fantastic. Mm-hmm. So I would like to ask you, Ed, if you would kind of share a little bit about this, this new game, new rules concept, and how you would encourage people to think about this.
Sure, absolutely. In fact, the way the little part that you read there segues beautifully into, I'll just pick it up from there in terms
Perfect.
Of the concept. In fact, that's a common talking point when I give a lecture. When I give a lecture at a facility or a residence for older adults, I always put in large, on the dry erase board or on the flip chart, whatever it is, the first thing they see when they walk into the room is, how will you spend your 120th birthday? That's the first thing they see when they walk into the room. And, yesterday I heard as someone mutter as I was writing it, in the ground. What I wound up later saying, I mean, hopefully in the course of it was an hour lecture, I said, if that's your hard and fast belief that you absolutely for certain will be in the ground by 120, I said, it's a very good likelihood that you'll get your preconceived vision. Mm-hmm. Whereas if we can open up, the way I say it jokingly in the book is 120 is the new 100. You know, it used to be that if you made it to 100, it was amazing. Now people are doing so much more than that. But so anyway, the story that I told last night, I said, now imagine, because I'm in New York, many of the buildings I go into were around 100 years ago. And I often say, now, imagine we're in the same building 100 years ago, so it's 1912. I said, and imagine it's the same kind of a facility. It's a residence for older adults. I said, now imagine that you're in the communal dining room and you're sitting next to someone and they start talking to you about their granddaughter's in vitro fertilization, or they start talking about a loved one who's having stem cell therapy, or they start talking about the latest advances in cloning. Now, imagine it's 1912 and someone's doing that. I said, it's very likely that very politely and gently you would change your seat because you'd say, there's something wrong with this person. You know, it's
exactly.
1912. No one ever heard of these things. And the point that I make there is that the world has changed so dramatically in the last 100 years. And in truth, I think it's really the last 50 that it's changed mm-hmm. so dramatically. And then I often... and what I often also follow up that thought with, and this is sort of like the sister thought to that idea, is, and this is what's so exciting to me, simultaneously something else is happening that's unprecedented. At the same time that we know more about science and medicine and technology than we've ever known before, there is concurrently a greater interest in what could be called the unseen or the intangible or the philosophical or the spiritual or the religious.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
So I mean that both science and spirit seem to be coming together more mm-hmm. fiercely than ever at this moment in time. To me, that's what makes this moment in time so rich in terms of possibility for transformation and change.
I so agree. I just find it fascinating, exciting, inspiring. I completely agree with you.
Wow, that's making me laugh, Melinda, because in a very good way, because I shared with you in one of our private phone calls, I said, you know, I my fear was when I released the book, I said there were two things I thought people were going to be saying to me, and one has come true, and that is that they say, wow, I'll never think of aging in quite the same way again, and that I'm so grateful for. But the other thing I thought they would be saying to me was, those that know me, gee, Ed, I always thought you were sane, you know, and that, no one has come back with that to me, and I'm still waiting for, you know, like, you know, this is too off-the-wall nuts and crazy, but I think that's why, you know, it's funny when you said that the book is rich. There's a saying in writing, Melinda, it would have been longer if I had less time, but because I had... I took so much time to get the book right, and that's a story in itself. But I stripped every ounce of fat, so to speak, from the text. I wanted it, every sentence, to be, you know, lovingly caressed and rich in that sense. And so that's why I wanted to be sure that it could be someone that had never been exposed to this idea before could sort of take it in.
Mm-hmm. And that's absolutely the way it comes across, because honestly, very few of us have been exposed to this concept, you know, in any way that we can really take it in, certainly. So it is written in a lovely and very readable manner, so that, you know, you can kind of, you can digest it. You can take it in bite-sized pieces, which it was so well thought out that way. Kudos to you for that. Absolutely.
Oh, thanks so much. So in terms of, I'm thinking, would you tell me, Melinda, wherever you'd like to go in terms of, I could talk about some more ideas from the first chapter, or if you have a question, or...
I actually would. I'd like to take, you know, one of these concepts that from the time we're little children, we're bombarded with the idea that we'll age, get sick, and ultimately die.
Right.
And, you know, if you can sort of take that and maybe expand on how that really isn't the way it is. I think what you said so beautifully is that in order to heal our relationship with life, we first need to heal our relationship with death. And in order to heal our relationship with death, we've got to really look at our core beliefs about this. So I know you've got some. I know you've got some ideas on that.
Sure. And picking up on that, I would say that an idea. Oh, by the way, just a real quick question, Melinda. I'm just curious. Had you ever been exposed to the idea of physical immortality before reading my book?
No, I have to say I really hadn't been exposed to it, other than just sort of a fleeting, you know, thought that it just, because it does show up in, you know, in books and fantasy movies and science fiction, that maybe it's going to be possible at some point in the future. I didn't really connect it to a possibility for my own life and my own experience. That's what was so astonishing to me about this. It was just like, as I began to read the book, it was like, what? He's talking about now. Which
Wow.
was great. I loved it.
I know one of your favorite expressions, Melinda, is music to my heart.
Uh-huh.
You know, music to my ears. What you've just said was music to my ears, Melinda. That was that. I can't tell you how gratifying that is.
Good.
To hear that. So thank you. So in fact, the joke that I make in the book, I say, if you know, not joke per se, but I say, if you you know, we're bombarded, you know, from the time we're little kids, you know, just get over it, accept it. You will age, get sick, and die. That's the natural order. It happens to everyone, and, you know, just accept it. And if you buck that idea, if you question it, and so few people have, I mean, Deepak Chopra, the two people I thank in the preface to my book are Sandra Ray and Deepak Chopra, because they both have, in different ways, addressed this. She addresses it, you know, much more explicitly, but he's talked very much about it in perhaps slightly less direct ways. But the idea is, as I've seen it, is that if you question it, then, or I should say, no one questions it for the fear that they will appear to be one of three things: either foolish, stupid, or just plain nuts. All right, like, I mean, that's the reaction I had, for example, when I first read the thing by Sandra Ray. So that is, you know, the culture that we live in. And in terms of that, I guess maybe I would like to introduce your listeners to two words. They can sort of double as nouns or adjectives. They come from the rebirthing movement, and the words are immortalist and deathist. So it's the word immortal with IST after it, and deathist, death with IST after it. Let's do the negative first. Let's do someone that, because it's very much a spectrum. I mean, it's not black or white. It's very right. much a continuum. So let me, but just to draw the picture, I want to just give an idea. I just saw the time. I can't believe how long we've been on. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
It's okay. Okay, great.
No problem. We're good. We're gonna just.
No, you know what?
Important.
I was thinking of our original start time. Forgive me.
We're good. We're fine.
Good. We're good.
Don't worry about it. We're just going to carry on and cover as much as we can.
Great.
And whatever we cover is going to be just right.
Okay.
So.
Thanks so much. someone who's
so deathist.
Someone whose beliefs are deathist. That would be someone who believes that, regardless of what their faith orientation is, meaning if they believe in an afterlife, you know, like a heaven, or if they believe in reincarnation, or if they believe, if they're an atheist and they believe that nothing happens after death, still the deathist is the person who believes that every day, every morning that they wake up, they are one day closer to that experience. So they are one day closer to physical death, and hence, depending on their belief orientation, they are one day closer either to the gates of heaven or in their next body or to becoming dust, as I like to say, if you know, atheistic. So you're the great void. So someone who is deathist says, no, that's what it is. Every day, no matter how excited I want to get about the future, I'm aware that each sunset, each sunrise is the dawning of a new day, one day closer to physical death. So that's, in very broad brushstrokes, Melinda, that's how I would describe that approach. Now, someone, on the other hand, who is a mortalist in beliefs, this is the person who believes that every day brings us closer to a greater expression of life. And in fact, it's the only thing that I insist that people, when they introduce me to give talks, the only thing I insist that they say is that he believes life gets richer and fuller with time, because I think that encapsulates this whole idea. In other words, tomorrow, your listeners, will be, can be, should be a, I'm not a fan of the word should, but in the context I'm using it here, can be a greater expression of who they are than they were the day before, knowing themselves more, more at peace with themselves, more loving life, more looking forward to what will unfold, more secure in sense of self. So that's and I'm leaving out one very key thing, that it doesn't have to lead to physical death, meaning that you can have unlimited days before you. So that's
wow.
That's how I would categorize the two ends of that spectrum.
Mm-hmm. Incredible, incredible. And it really was a truly new concept for me. I mean, I too was raised Catholic. And over the years, I have come to believe, you know, in reincarnation as being our immortal path. So this was just, you know, this was like a whole new twist on it.
Wow.
When I read your book, it was just, it was great. I just thought, oh my gosh, you know, and it really stirred up a lot of thinking in me and, you know, ideas and contemplation. It was just kind of like, wow, you know, I'm a baby boomer. We don't want to die. Baby boomers want to live forever. So,
yeah.
You know, did we kind of help set this in motion with our desires and our ideas and our energetic, you know, energetic construct that maybe we really can live forever? Let's open that up as a possibility here. I'd love your thoughts on that.
I don't know if we as baby boomers per se, in other words, I think what it is I think it's a I think it's an idea whose time has come. I put a quote in the book, Victor Hugo, there's nothing, I hate to paraphrase because it's such a beautiful quote, but there's the only thing more powerful than 100 armies is an idea whose time has come. It's something to that effect.
Yeah.
So, because when you think about, like, I talk a lot, and this is what I ask the reader in the book, as you know, Melinda, I take the reader on a slow, gentle journey, just a lot of self-exploration. And I ask them to look at the things you were taught, you know, as a kid, growing up. What were you taught about God and life and afterlife? I mean, things that I can remember, you know, I remember being told that I had to go to purgatory after I died. First, I was told for sure I had to die. Then after I died, I had to go to purgatory, which my 9-year-old friend Paulie, he described it as like hell, but only for a little while. You know, and it sort of
right.
made me,
that's
but I still got to go to hell.
I was
9, you know, and then
uh-huh.
in those days, oh, this, I love this one, Melinda. If you ate, maybe you'll remember this one. If you ate meat on a Friday, you were doomed to burn in hell forever.
Right.
I mean, that was considered a mortal sin. Now, in the book, I call that the institutionalized ego gone mad, because no God
has
ever.
There's plenty of that.
I'm sorry, Melinda?
There is plenty of that.
Oh,
ego gone mad.
Yeah, I mean, because no God ever had that thought. You know, what to do? Oh, in 1972, I had a Big Mac. You have to burn in hell forever. You know, I don't think that's God's thinking. You know.
No, it makes no sense. Makes no sense. Yeah. So that's part of the new game, new rules. You know, all of those old rules and structures that we were kind of either encouraged to accept or forced to accept at whatever point in our growing up. And, you know, which of those do we still really keep ourselves completely boxed in by as being all there is? Really fascinating to begin to contemplate all of this. And I have to say, when I read the book, there were periods when I had to just put it down and just kind of go, wow, I really just need to sit with this and think about it for a few minutes, because this is really amazing. This is, you know, this is totally new. This approach is so different, and I love it. It's, wow, talk about exciting possibilities. This changes everything. It really does.
Well,
it changes everything for all of us, from children, you know, all the way up through the elders. If that's a new possibility, it just opens the door to all kinds of new approaches to life and to work and passion and enthusiasm.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I mean, if you, as I say in the book, at one point I said, you know, if you believe that death is a certainty at a certain age, and granted, it's becoming later and later for most people, but like, you know, why consider a new career, for example, let's say at age 60, if you think, well, you know, maybe I have at most 5 years of health and working life ahead of me, whereas, you know, this kind of thinking that I'm suggesting would say, you know, there was a woman in one of my groups that I once led, and she was 92, and she wanted to write a book, and she told me, she said, everyone says it can't be, you know, I'm too old, forget it. I said, and her name was Elsie. I said, Elsie, look, what I'm going to say to you is not rocket science. I said, but you know, if you just write a page a day, I said, at the end of a year, you've got something that's looking pretty much like a book, you know. And
right.
And one of the greatest compliments I've ever received, professional compliments, in my life, Melinda, was, I'm thinking of Elsie now, because her she had a she was very vibrant and active. I had no idea she was 92. And what I mean by that is that she looked physically a lot younger, and I don't mean necessarily, you know, kind of an enhanced way. I just mean she looked naturally younger. She had a private aide that used to stay with her, and I wasn't fully sure why, but one day, because, I mean, she seemed fully capable and able, but one day the private aide came up to me, and she said, may I talk to you for a moment? And I thought, oh, maybe I did something wrong. I said, sure. And she said, I just want to tell you, she said that, and I had only been at this organization at that time around a month, and she said, I've been with Elsie for about 7 years. She said, and this last month is the best I've ever seen her. She said, and I think it's because of you. And I said, me? I said, and then she said this. She said, no one talks to them the way you do. And I guess that the difference is, Melinda, I don't see the 92-year-old as close to death. So when you don't see them as close to death, you talk to them about possibilities. And a concept that will not be foreign to any of your listeners is form follows thought. And if you put in front of someone the idea that you have unlimited possibility, so what? The number that you carry is 92. You have unlimited possibility, and you can demonstrate that. And sometimes we just need someone to say, I believe that you can do it, you know?
Yes. So true. Absolutely. Yeah. So important for us to, I think, to really consciously look at, you know, what our beliefs are, how we were raised, what those opinions are and those social mores are that we've accepted. And unfortunately, all too often, once people are in either an assisted living community or a retirement community or the like, they're treated suddenly differently than they were the day before they move in there.
Mm-hmm.
And there are not as many people who are really interacting with them in such a full and caring and respectful way to engage them, to learn about them, to encourage them. That's so important. And I obviously your passion for this and your deep commitment to this, it's so obvious, Ed. It's beautiful. And I think we need some pathlighters. We need pathlighters like you, you know, light bringers, way showers, to, you know, begin to kind of, and in some cases you're forging a path through some pretty hard rock. I know. But it's so important, and it needs to be done, and it's great that it can be done. And your book is a perfect example of that. The reception that you're getting to your book. It's wonderful. I know people are loving it.
Yeah.
It's just, I think it's time. It's just time for a change.
Wow, wow. Melinda, I'm just so grateful to be on this call with you, having this experience. You know, I think one thing I didn't say in our early chat in this call was that I put it out to the universe when I heard you do the interview with Rudy, and I said, "Wow!" I said, "I'm so foreign to that world." I said, "And I don't know about the webinar, the interview world, this and that." I said, "But if anyone." If she ever asked me, I think I once wrote this to you later in an email. I said, if she ever asked me, I would say yes, because I'm like rather, you know, media shy. And I said, but if she ever asked me, I would say yes. You asked me within 24 hours of my putting that out to the universe.
I love it. I love it.
So, I mean, and here it is. I mean, like, the prototype is so beautiful because, you know, here it's someone who's in the spiritual world but hadn't been exposed to this particular aspect of New Age thought.
Right.
I'm deeply, you know, touched and humbled by this experience. It's almost dreamlike for me. I mean, I know I'm on this call with you and it's really happening, but it is.
It's really happening.
Yeah, no, it's.
Oh, well, I'm just so delighted. And this is just such a fantastic topic to be able to share with my listening community. And I just can't wait until I start getting the comments back, because I know there's going to be a lot. And, you know, the exposure to your book, I'm delighted to help, because this is important. This is really important. So I know one of the things that you feel is really so key to sort of changing our own belief in the possibilities is kind of breaking the chain. And would you explain what you mean by that and maybe take us through some of your thinking and your ideas in that regard?
Sure, absolutely. I believe, Melinda, and this is just a very personal thought, I believe that this world was meant to be paradise. And in fact, the way I usually say it is that I believe this world will be transformed into paradise once unconditional kindness is extended among and between all people. In the 60s, there were all these songs about love, and love is a great thing. You know, all you need is love, and what the world needs now is love. But I think there's something far more valuable than love, and that's kindness, because you don't have to care about someone to be kind. And imagine if we were all universally kind toward one another. And kindness, you know, it's such a simple thing to do. You see, you know, a mother with a new baby, and you tell her how beautiful the baby is. You know, you give up your seat for someone who looks tired. I mean, kindness is such a simple act. And it just seems to me that, you know, when I visit a dear friend who lives out on Long Island, and I remember once, this image always stuck with me. I think we had to get off on 23N, and we had gotten off 23 South. So he said, I got off the wrong place. He said, but no worries. He said, there's a turnaround right here. So we had gone south, and I like the metaphor. We had gone south. But we had to we had to correct the compass, and in this case go north. And I'm you know, this is not a geographical slur. You understand what I'm getting at?
Yes.
And to me, Melinda, it's that simple. We are so close to touching this world as paradise. I mean, if you've ever held I think of this world. If you've ever held a 9 month old baby, or if you've ever held a puppy, or if you've ever seen a field of daffodils where the yellow is so blinding that you have to turn your head away for a moment. I mean, there's so many moments in this world, on this planet, where I can't imagine something more paradise-like, paradisial, I never know what that word is, but you know what I'm trying to say, then,
yeah,
this,
sure,
then this world, if only we would be kind to each other. I mean, I think it's what I'm so, I believe it is what will break the chain of what has us bound, you know, and part of that, I think, is also that we've been bound by, you know, what we've been taught, you know. Is so much of it, and that's why, you know, it says on the book jacket that this might be considered blasphemous by some people, but my intentions were not at all to be blasphemous. You know, it was just to have people really look at, you know, what they were taught, what they believe, and maybe they were looking at the wrong Bible quotes. There's a favorite quote that I have in the book from the Bible, and you know, I know the Bible some, not a whole lot, but in the first letter to the Corinthians, this quote, and this is the modern English translation, I just thought, wow, this was so beautiful. It says, and this is from Corinthians 15, chapter 15, verses 53-54. And I know that because it's in the book, and I had to know it for the publishing purposes. And the quote is, "For our perishable earthly bodies must be transformed into heavenly bodies that will never die. When this happens, when our perishable earthly bodies have been transformed into heavenly bodies that will never die, then at last the scriptures will come true." And my commentary after that, my words, I wrote, could any of us aspire to a loftier goal?
Exactly.
Because there's so, you know, the religion, you know, I'm sure when we were kids, Melinda, it was, you know, you die, you go to heaven. And then I laugh sometimes at all the restrictions around it, because, you know, it used to be that no Catholics could be cremated because God couldn't find the ashes to resurrect the body. The whole goal was getting back to a physical body anyway. I mean, I'm just saying, cut out the middleman. Mm-hmm. Just don't die in the first place.
Love it.
And then the Catholic Church.
Yeah, let's make this efficient here.
Right. And then the Catholic Church, I got a kick out of it. They said, because too many people wanted to be cremated. And so they said, okay, well, you can cremate a person, but if you do, keep the urn in one place, keep all the ashes together, because God is talented, but not so talented as to be able to find the ashes if you scatter it. So, I mean, and the point I make in the book is all these ideas and thoughts that churches establish, they're really, you know, it's from the minds of men, largely, is mm-hmm. my point in the book.
Right.
And
that
often goal,
for purpose of either power or control or just lack of understanding, lack of consciousness, you know, they were as evolved as they could be at that point in evolution. So I love it that you are really taking this not just a couple steps further, but kind of light speed ahead. And I also know that one of the things in the book that you really focus on is celebrating adulthood, which I loved that chapter. And you say each of us has a special gift, a passion in life that is uniquely ours, and we can find it at any age. And
yeah,
I totally agree with that. I have to say, for myself, I was over 55 years old, and I'm giving myself away here, but I really did not find my true passion until after age 55. And I know so many people that are kind of feeling the same way, and many of them are older than that. So it's just, it's so important, and I'd love to kind of hear your thoughts on that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And that, you know, kudos to you, Melinda, for because I know, sadly, I know, you know, I know too many people that would never give themselves permission to make those changes. I think, as I said it in the book, I know too many lawyers who became lawyers because their fathers wanted them to. And I think that's fine if in early in life, but then I know people that are afraid to have those, you know, to let what awakens awaken. And that you did, you know, so I just want to take a moment to say kudos to you for that.
Well, you know, Ed, I think what's happening, it certainly was true for me, but I'm hearing it so much all around me, really. It's gotten to the point where it's almost like we don't have a choice. We just have to. We just have to find meaning and purpose. And so because we're open to it, you know, we find it.
I think it's
a movement, really, that's occurring right now.
Yes, and that relates very much to one of your recent Friday Energy of Calls. We did the Energy of 2012. I think that really, something really is afoot. Something really is changing. You know, you'll hear it over and over and over again. People in the circles we travel in, and I think you joked on one of your and by the way, I love about you, Melinda. I mean, it's sounding like, you know, like a fan fest here. But one of the things I love about that I said this to you, I think, in an email. I love that you'll let yourself laugh at something you've said. You know, you're alone in the studio. You're broadcasting your Friday calls, and you just let yourself laugh. You know, because I have a whole thing in the book about laughter and humor. But I love that you know, that spirit is there, because that, and I think it's that playful laughing self that is waking up now and saying, you know, really, can't we make this what life was intended to be? Can it be so much more than you know, poverty, sickness, war, famine? Can it be so much more than that? Haven't we evolved now to the point where it should change? And I think that's what I hear over and over again, these people saying on these you know, shows like yours, that it happened to me. I had no choice. I was thrown on the path, and I had to wake up.
Yes, it's, you know, it's kind of like we're all really beginning to understand in a really big way that there's important work to do here, and it's different than the kind of work we've ever done before in our lives. And just like your book, I mean, even though you've been an aging specialist and your background is in gerontology and you've worked with that community, this book is a whole different way, a whole different work than you've ever done. So, yes, you've done some of the methods and the techniques, and you've studied, and you've, you know, kind of infused yourself with understanding. But you took the risk of kind of putting yourself out there by publishing this kind of groundbreaking book that sort of it's got a lot of implications. You know, this could kind of shake things up in people's attitudes, and that was risky. So I kind of get a sense from you too that you had to do it. You absolutely were just sort of driven to do it. And I find this so exciting because it's just showing up everywhere. I'm meeting people and talking to people and being introduced to people in other parts of the world, and we're all kind of, it's like you said, something's afoot. There's something that is just sort of pushing us all forward to learn more, to grow more, to do more that really is meaningful. And I love it. And that truly is, that is heading us toward paradise. It gives a whole new kind of understanding and a whole new sense of purpose and importance to what we're doing and our thoughts. And, you know, it's kind of a grand experiment, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you know, none of us knows where life will end up. But what I say in the book is which is the better of the two choices? To say, you know, some people say, well, I'm afraid to embrace the path of longevity and dramatic longevity or physical immortality, because if I die, I'll look foolish. And then my question in the book is, so what's the alternative then? To proclaim with certainty that you are heading to your grave? I mean, that's really sort of the I realize that's polar opposite ends of the spectrum, but you know, that is really what we're faced with. You know,
right, right, absolutely. Well, Go ahead.
Oh no, I was just going to say something that you had touched on before about. I'm thinking of the talk I gave last night when I was saying that how the radical concepts in my book, and one of the things I said is what you just said about how we were each have a special gift. And I said that's not unique to me. That's not radical. But here's the radical part. We can find it at any age. And the way I tell it in the book, I put it in the context of being of Italian ancestry. There's an old Italian saying, and for any of your listeners that you know, speak fluent Italian, my apologies for what I'm about to do to the language, the expression is ogni bambino è nato con una pagnata di pane. And that translates to every child is born with a loaf of bread. And the way that is typically used in its most common context, it's like, let's say, you know, 100 years ago, a mother in a village, she was pregnant with her sixth child, and they didn't know how they're going to survive, you know, the times are so hard, et cetera, et cetera. And the neighboring mother might come by and say, don't worry, every child is born with a loaf of bread, meaning, in other words, somehow God will provide.
Yeah.
But I once heard it used in a far more poetic and lyrical way by the actress and humanitarian Marlo Thomas, who's half Italian. And she said when she heard that expression, the way she interpreted it was that that's each child's special gift. So every child is born with a special gift. That's their loaf of bread. And that's what I think, you know, is really, you know, from my bio, I have a background also in vocational counseling. And to me, it's really about our gifts. What did we come to contribute? We each have a gift, and it excites me to think that we can find it and we can find it at any age.
Amazing. I think this is so beautiful and so very important right now. And I love this topic, and I mean, I could go on with you, Ed. This is so fascinating for hours. But I'm looking at the clock, and I realize that we're really almost out of time. But I do want to take just a moment to just let everyone know that, again, the title of Ed's book is Life Unlimited, A Timeless Approach to Aging and Longevity. This can be purchased online. It is now in some bookstores. Is that right?
Yes.
I know it's on Amazon.
Right. And there are links on my website. If they want to visit my website, there's links to various formats of it. In terms of protocol, am I allowed to give my web address?
Yes, absolutely. Please do, of course.
Okay. www.edwardfranco.com, EDWARDFRANCO.com.
And there will also be a replay for those of you who are either not in a place where you're able to write down and take any notes. I know sometimes people listen while they're commuting. But do know that there is going to be an email that will go out to all of you with a replay of this interview and also a link so that you can purchase the book if you would like. And I highly recommend it. I thought this was one of the I have to honestly say this was one of the most important and life-changing books that I have read this year. It is awesome. Yeah, I do really believe this, Ed. It's just so fresh and so so perfect as far as the time. And the fact that it really has come out, and we're really exposing it in a big way right before December 2012, that can't be just an accident.
Yeah.
It can't be.
Oh.
So Ed, I thank you so very much for your time. This was so interesting and so profoundly important, and I know that my listening community is going to appreciate it tremendously. So I cannot thank you enough.
Oh, my great pleasure, Melinda. May I leave them with just one final thought on this?
You bet. Please do.
Because if I had to encapsulate the book in one sentence, I would say, it was never God's intention that we age, get sick, and die. Rather, we believe we must, and therefore we do. And I ask people to really think, I just want to say that one more time, because I think it's that important. It was never God's intention that we age, get sick, and die. Rather, we believe we must, and therefore we do. And my tag thought to that is that what God who loved its children would decree that they fall prey to aging, sickness, and death. And I just ask your listeners to sit with that in their heart and see what resonates for them.
That's great. Thank you. What I would like all of you to consider doing is, if this resonated with you, if you have any comments or questions, please don't hesitate to either put them into the Q&A box if you're listening via the webcast, or certainly you can always email me at emboldenedheart@gmail.com. And Ed's encouraging all of us to learn to say no to all of the cultural conditioning and stereotypes around aging and death. And I definitely will encourage you to do the same. So, Ed, again, thank you so much. I so appreciate you and the wonderful work that you're doing and your contribution with this wonderful book and your talks and your enthusiasm. Thank you so much.
Oh, my great pleasure, Melinda, and really, truly, this was a dream come true for me to be able to have such a wonderful first experience like this in terms of an interview, and many blessings to you, and I know this is the beginning of a long relationship.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And blessings to your listeners as well.
Oh, thank you, Ed. Everyone, enjoy the rest of your day, and namaste. Bye-bye for now.